focused on the Wonder Years.
The Berlini Pole. Freedom and Whip cupcakes.
Who cares about a stupid pole anyway?
Guess you got best smile. And the best eyes.
Brainiest.
There's nothing wrong with being brainy. Hey, big brain.
Then I'd rather be ugliest and brainiest. Four eyes. Pretty attractive, huh?
Who said you were ugly?
It's these stupid glasses.
Glasses can make the man.
You think so?
You're a very special person.
Because I'd never really thought about it that way before.
And the thing is, after all these years, I still look back with wonder.
Hey, Wonderlings, I'm Angela Bowen, the host of Looking Back on My Wonder Years, a Wonder Years podcast. And today, I will be reviewing Season 3, Episode 21, entitled Coco in Sympathy. The air date for this episode was May 1st, 1990. Let's waste no time jumping into this Paul/Norma-focused episode. In this episode, when Paul is voted brainiest on this year's Lisa Berlini poll, he goes through some self-esteem problems. That is, until Kevin's mom tries to help Paul's competence, and in return, Paul develops a crush on Kevin's mom. Ah, so Lisa Berlini still exists, just in name only, though. Because we never see her in this episode, but her name is mentioned at least a couple times. Her legendary list of the who's hot and who's not of RFK Junior High student body. So I can only imagine this list, right? I'm sure it's got great ass, amazing abs, dreamy eyes, most fuckable, best hair, and brainiest. I mean, that's all for the guys. I can imagine. Can you imagine what the girls' list is like? You think Winnie might be on it? Let's also throw out there, now this term was not coined until probably what, 1999? MILF? Yeah. For all those of you that are living under a rock, you all don't know that MILF stands for Mom, I'd Like to F. Not me personally, but who's got the best looking mom? The boys, believe it or not, all talk about that in this episode. It's kind of creepy. Okay, the episode starts with some TV clips of shows of comedians, three students, the Three Stooges, and others, as Kevin talks about bits and comedic routines as we flash to present day at the dinner table, or is it the breakfast table, where Kevin and Wayne are shoving each other, you know, like they do at the dinner table. It must happen every fucking time they're there. Wayne actually manages to shove Kevin into Karen, and then she yells at them, at Kevin, to grow up, as she shoves Kevin back into Wayne. Norma shows off her multitasking skills as Jack comes in. She hands him a glass, then she goes to ask Kevin if he fed the dog, to which he replies, "Can you do it? I'm going to be late for school." And she looks at him like, "You wanted the dog, Kevin." Well, gee, that didn't take long, did it? 9 episodes later and Kevin is already over this dog ownership. Give the dog to someone else then. I figured, typical kid, he wants the dog but not the responsibility. He's 14 for fuck's sake. Take care of the damn dog or give it to someone who will. Norma tells Karen she's already sewed the button on her clothing last night when she asks, like, "Oh, did you sew my?" And she's like, "Yep, already took care of it last night." Then she hands Wayne something before he even finished asking for it. That's a great mom and wife there. She knows you better than you know yourself, including what you want before you ask for it. Wow. She turns to Jack and tells him she got the tickets for the concert series, and Jack, not even listening, says, "Oh, no thanks. I got my coffee already." I'm like, okay, that's not what I asked. She tells him, "No, I'm talking about the concert series that's starting on Thursday, you know, with their chamber music." She's like, "Oh, I think it'll be fun." "Yeah, that's what I want to do after I get out of work. Be put to sleep by chamber music, sure." "Give me John Williams tribute concert, which I've been to. It was pretty awesome. Or Josh Groban any day of the week." Jack tells her, Thursday, damn, that's going to be a bad day because of that damn audit." At first, I thought Jack was going to say, "Oh, Thursday, that's going to be a bitch." But he wouldn't say that on this show. Not our Jack. He tells her, you know what? One of the kids will go with you. Oh, really? Well, they will. Norma looks on at her kids like, I don't really want to go with them. And they all agree as they come up with excuses. Karen's all like, I've got a date. When the hell doesn't she have a date? That's like her go-to number one excuse. Kevin's like, sorry, I got a big history test to cram for. And Wayne, he just bites into something that looks like a rice cake. But it's probably toast. But toast doesn't sound crunchy like a rice cake. In the boys' bathroom, Paul is complaining about the cowlick standing up in the back of his hair and looks at Kevin telling him, I can't show my face in the lunchroom. Oh, for heaven's sake, Paul, just put some water on it, wet it down, dunk your head under the faucet, it'll be fine. Kevin basically tells him, hey, just chill, it's a cowlick. Easy for you to say, Kev, have you ever had a bad hair day in your life? Paul tells him, it looks like I've got pipe cleaner sticking out of my head. Oh, you do not, you just look like alfalfa, that's all. Hobson again appears, comes into the bathroom, and in fact, that's what he calls Paul. He's like, hey, alfalfa, as soon as he sees him. With him, Hobson has the results of the latest Lisa Berlini poll. And he puts it on the mirror hung up by his gum. Ew, that is gross. I'm going to play that clip right now. I'll be right back. And the clip is going to be of the kids all looking at their results. The boys all looking at their results to see who got what.
Did you see the Berlini poll?
What?
The Lisa Berlini poll. The definitive rating of the male faction at RFK Junior High. It was the kind of document that eventually led to deep-seated neuroses and psychotherapy. Not that we knew about that stuff in eighth grade.
Freedom and weep, cupcakes. My name on it?
Best eyes? I got best eyes? What about the rest of my face?
Well, I guess it could have been worse.
Brainiest.
I could have been Paul.
Does anybody see my name?
Man, last time at least I got best mannered.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with being brainy.
Thank God I didn't get brainies. Man, first a cowlick the size of Mount Rushmore, now this.
Uh-oh. You could sense Paul heading for a major league slump here. This was gonna take care.
Paul, nobody's gonna notice. Trust me.
You think so?
Yeah.
Care and a little good luck.
So the boys all gather around the results and Kevin comments on how he got best eyes. Well, it was done by Lisa Berlini, so maybe she liked his eyes, even though she friend-zoned him in season one. Paul grimaces when he sees he's listed under brainiest. There's nothing wrong with being smart, but poor Paul thinks it's an insult. Maybe in junior high it kind of is. I don't know. Maybe. Meanwhile, Doug's having a conniption asking, hey, does anyone see my name? I'm like, you know what? Well, Doug, if you gotta ask, then no, I guess you're not up there. I mean, he's right up, like, nose to the paper looking, like, does anyone see my name? Like, oh, no, you're not up there. I don't know why you would be, but I don't know. You're a nice guy, Doug, but I have no idea. I mean, Kevin tries to cheer up Paul, telling him there's nothing wrong with being brainy. And Paul mentions how last year I got best mannered last year. I mean, easy for you to say, Kev. You got best eyes. What the hell kind of category is that? Best mannered? That sounds like something you get at a fancy dinner party if someone were passing out compliments. As soon as Kevin tells him that, some guy dressed to the nines in dorkaliciousness walks past them mentioning, whew, good thing I didn't get brainy. Paul complains, first a cowlick the size of Mount Rushmore, now this. I notice the bathroom has little cubbies where they can stick their books and binders while they use the bathroom. No bathroom I ever used in school had those. Those would have been helpful. But it's not like I was toting around a bunch of books and crap. I mean, I had my bag with me, I think, when I could have my bag in class. Kevin tells him, you know, no one is going to notice. It's going to be fine. So in Kevin's basement after school, they're watching some horror movie with a big brain attacking people. Actually, it turns out they were watching this movie called The Crawling Eye from 1958. And Paul comments on how the giant brain, that's a giant brain, saying, yeah, he said that. That's a big brain. So actually, it was an eyeball because they looked the movie up on YouTube. Like, what is this movie? And it was just a bunch of gobbledygook shit. I'm like, I want to see where this thing attacks or whatever. It's like, okay. Anyway, so I looked up the features for this episode on IMDb. And in the beginning, it showed a clip of the George Burns and Gracie Allen show. A clip of the Three Stooges and the Smother Brothers Comedy Hour. So I want to play this clip as Norma comes down with the laundry and tells Paul that you're not ugly when he complains about getting brainiest on the Lisa Berlini poll because he's like, ah, stupid glasses, as he takes them off. Norma picks him up and tells him how she's known him for a long time and she always felt that his glasses made him look manly. Okay. Kevin's not buying into this, of course, but Norma tells Paul how a lot of great men wear glasses, you know, like Arthur Miller. And Kevin's like, who the hell is Arthur Miller? The only reason that name sounds even remotely familiar is because of the Crucible play. They always said Arthur Miller's The Crucible. As he also did Death of a Salesman as well. So I did look at, you know, when I was doing my notes for this, I looked that up. Yes, he did Death of a Salesman as well as Crucible and a couple other things. But surprising fact, I did not know he was married to Marilyn Monroe for 5 years. So Kevin asks, who's Arthur Miller? Right as Paul asks, Norma, you think Arthur Miller was handsome? Norma tells him, well, not just me. Marilyn Monroe thought so, too. And I'm like, well, you know what? If I just watched that scene play out, I wouldn't have had to have looked it up. I mean, I would have found out first. I mean, she didn't say that Marilyn Monroe was married to him. She just said Marilyn Monroe found him attractive as well. So Paul takes off. Actually, when I looked up Arthur Miller, I noticed that he was married for like to three different people. And she was like the second person. Like, he had divorced his first wife the same year I think he got married to Marilyn Monroe, which their marriage lasted for 5 or 6 years. Then he got with somebody else, and then that marriage was the longest. That lasted from like 1962 to 2002. And then I think he died in 2005. So Norma tells him his glasses make the man, as she asks if they want cocoa. And Paul adds how he's allergic to instant. But Norma assures him, like, don't worry, I make it from scratch. As she, you know, throws in, you know, it always cheers up Kevin. Kevin starts to object as Paul's like, oh, that'd be great. So I want to play that clip right now. And I will be right back.
Paul, it's just a stupid movie.
Man, I'd rather be ugliest than brainiest.
Paul Pfeiffer, who said you were ugly?
Nobody said he was ugly.
No, they said brainiest. The babe's already starting to beat down my door. It's these stupid glasses.
What are you talking about?
Never mind, Mom.
After all, if I couldn't cheer the guy up, what could Mom do?
Paul, I've known you a long time. And I've always thought that your glasses make you look very manly.
Manly?
Manly?
Absolutely.
Of course, she was obviously throwing him a line. Still, the fish were biting.
You know, a lot of great men wear glasses.
Like who?
Well, like Arthur Miller.
Who's Arthur Miller?
You think Arthur Miller is handsome?
Well, not just me. Marilyn Monroe thought so, too.
I guess I'd never really thought about it that way before.
Naturally, he hadn't. It was patently ridiculous, whoever Arthur Miller was.
Glasses can make the man, Paul.
Still, you had to hand it to old Mom. Paul was lapping up the kind words like,
hey, how about some cocoa?
I'm allergic to instant.
Oh, I make it from scratch. Always cheers Kevin up.
Look, Mom, I don't think you...
That sounds great.
Let's go. I'm in the mood for some, too. How about you, honey?
No, no thanks. So, Paul's four glasses.
Well?
Sure, let them have a little time together. There was no skin off my nose. After all, Mom's cocoa and sympathy could never prepare Paul for the cold realities of...
Hey, Brainiac! Heard any good theorems lately, Gray Matter?
You know, and I'm all like, yeah, Kevin, let Paul speak for himself. You don't know, maybe he wants some cocoa. I wonder how you make it from scratch. I mean, I'm sure if I actually wanted to make it myself, I could find a recipe online or watch a YouTube video on how to prepare it. Norma tells them she's in the mood for cocoa as well, as she and Paul head up the stairs after Kevin turns down her offer to join them as he hears Paul ask Norma who else she knows that wore glasses. Kevin sits in the basement and thinks to himself how cocoa and sympathy won't help Paul avoid the onslaught of name-calling he endures the next day at school. As he and Kevin walk the hall, some kid calls him Brainiac and asks if he's heard any good theorems, and then calls him Gray Matter. What the fuck is that kid going on about? You know, I looked that up and it's all science stuff that of course wouldn't interest me in the slightest. Some girls pass Paul and say, hey, big brain. Then their friend Randy Mitchell comes up and tells him, it's not so bad. You sure there are plenty of librarians looking for a man? Oh, because back then all librarians were old single spinster women over the age of 50. Kevin tells us it's time to come to the rescue of his friend. But Paul just turns to Randy and tells him, I guess being brainy is just something you'll never have to worry about. Good for you, Paul. Stick up for yourself. Randy comes back with a four-eyes insult, and Paul hits him with a, hey, pal, Arthur Miller wears glasses, to which Randy replies, who's Arthur Miller? And Paul tells him, why don't you ask Marilyn Monroe, as he walks off. Paul can handle himself. I mean, look at him handling his own shit. He takes it and dishes it right back. Kevin looks at Paul in amazement as he sees a new, more confident Paul emerge. He's glad that Paul is feeling better, but is surprised when he comes home from school to see Paul recounting his day with Norma as she folds laundry. Kevin and he are later shooting hoops by the garage as Paul mentions about wanting to get wire rims. Kevin's like, wire rims? And Paul tells him, well, to accentuate the positive, and reminds him how glasses make the man. Paul tells him, you know, I could probably get my dad to special order some frames like Donald Perlman. And Kevin asks, who's that? Paul tells him, well, it's your mom's old boyfriend from high school. She showed me him in the yearbook. Well, in her yearbook. Here's a question. Why would Paul want to look like Norma's old boyfriend? Okay, I was all on board for her cheering him up, but this is bordering on creepy now. Is this where his mom crush on Norma begins? Paul tells Kevin that he and Norma must have talked for an hour yesterday, and Kevin asks, where was I? I mean, like, you know, I don't know. You were probably watching TV or with Winnie. You were somewhere. Do I detect some jealousy in Kevin's question, though? Paul asks, why didn't you ever tell me your mom wanted to be a singer? Paul asks, isn't that a funny story about the audition for the radio commercial? Kevin, of course, fakes it by claiming, well, it's not so funny when you've heard it a billion times. And Paul tells him he found the part about the shoulder pads hilarious. And I'm like, shoulder pads? I thought that was a thing in the 80s. Unless they were just more popular in the 80s than and if this is 1970, so I'm not sure. Kevin, fed up, asks Paul if he wants something to drink, and Paul's like, oh, you know, I'll get it. Okay. Kevin takes the alone time to shoot a bunch of baskets while envisioning himself taking the last-minute shot at an NBA game. This lasts a few minutes before he decides to check on what happened to Paul, and he walks up to the door and sees in the window Paul chatting it up with his mom. Paul seems to be telling her something humorous because, as Kevin puts it, his mother laughed harder than he'd ever seen her before. Well, it's gotta be nice to have something to break up your day, even if it's funny anecdotes told by your son's best friend. I mean, all day, every day, she's a wife and mother, cooking, cleaning, doing laundry, etc. It's got to be nice just to step back for a moment and have a little conversation and enjoyment from someone who isn't always needing something from you. In the next scene, we get a shot of long legs and short skirts, courtesy of the field hockey girls, and whoever shot this scene, as we see the girls laugh and toss their hair back, I mean, it's kind of creepy. It's just close-up shots of these girls' legs. They're like 13, 14 years old, and they're wearing short, you know, field hockey skirts. It's like gross, ew. Especially in light of what's going on now and shit in Hollywood. Are we supposed to suspect they're laughing about Paul, though? Oh, I guess they even have cheerleaders, too, hence the cheerleading practice going on alongside the field hockey team, or practice. I was starting to wonder what the point of the scene was, being the fact that it was going on for too long. But then I saw the boys in the stands, Kevin and his crew. It looks to me that they're creating a list of their own as I spy paper and pencil in hand. As the guys check out the girls and form their own list, like best body, who most of the boys agree with, this one girl, but Doug vetoes it as he mentions another girl who, quote-unquote, shaves her legs. Hobson tells Doug to quit drooling as who shows up to join the fun but Paul. Kevin continues on suggesting who has the best smile, but is cut off by Paul, who asks, you know who has the best smile? And then he tells them, Kevin's mom. I'm like, ugh, Paul, no! You were supposed to keep that on the DL, buddy! I want to play this clip. I will be right back. Yeah, this clip is just basically teenage boys being teenage boys and lusting after teenage girls.
Article 5, Section 6 of the 8th Grade Boys Code of Conduct. When faced with a popularity poll you don't like, make up your own. Of course, we took it seriously. There was an art to this. Points awarded for intelligence, political awareness, and of course...
Best body?
Eva Jenkins.
No way! Holly Stern! She shaves her legs.
Dad, you're drooling.
Of course he was drooling. That's what adolescents do.
Hi.
Well, most adolescents.
What are you guys doing?
Oh, decide to spend some time with people your own age, huh?
We're doing a poll to get back at Lisa Berlini.
How about best smile?
You know who has a nice smile? Your mom.
Was he nuts? When the guys found out what he thought about my mother, they would...
Yeah. You know, Arnold's mom's not bad.
Agree.
She shaves her legs, too. You're talking about my mother.
As if she were some kind of, woman.
Well, I think we should put down Kevin's mom for best smile.
Paul, that's ridiculous. I mean, this is a school poll.
Wait a minute. Pfeiffer's actually got a decent idea.
Uh-oh.
Lisa Blaney should know she's in competition with real women.
Hobson decides to weigh in with his opinion, mentioning how Arnold's mom isn't bad. I am so happy that American Pie came out in 1999 and the term MILF hadn't been coined yet. Randy and the other boys nod in agreement, and then Doug, with the icing on the cake, adds, she shaves her legs too. Ew. Doug, what the fuck is wrong with you? Kevin looks at him in horror like, dude, come on, that's my mom. I mean, you're talking about his mother, Doug. Jeez, what if someone mentioned something like that about your mom? Wouldn't you be a little grossed out? Paul says, yeah, we should put down Kevin's mom for best smile. Okay, Paul, first of all, no. And second of all, just stop. This is a list made up of age-appropriate girls. No 30 to 40-year-old women allowed on this list. Kevin says, it's a school poll. You know, his infatuation is reaching an uncomfortable Mary Kay Letourneau level, at least on his end. Kevin looks at Paul, tells him, you know, this is a school poll. But then, to his surprise, Hobson tells Paul that, you know, this is actually a good idea. That Lisa Berlini should know she's in competition with real women. Women, that's fine, but not your moms. That's just nasty, guys. Come on. At home, Norma shows Kevin what she got for his tub. So Kevin and Wayne have their own tub and bathroom? Why did they think that this was a bathroom for the whole family? Then the phone rings, and I'll give you 3 guesses who it could be. Yep, you guessed it. It's Paul. Kevin waves his hands at Norma, like, tell him I'm not here. Tell him I'm not here. I'm not home. But turns out he actually wants to talk to Norma as she turns around and tells Kevin, it's actually for me. Paul tells her something funny that makes her laugh, and then she hangs up the phone and worries about cooking dinner as Jack's going to be home soon as she rummages through the cupboard for dinner ideas. She lets it slip to Kevin that Paul's actually going to be going to the concert with her for the chamber music concert. Kevin looks at her in dismay, and she tells him that's why he called, since she told him that Jack couldn't come with her. She pulls out of the fridge what looks like a frozen pizza. And, you know, I was writing the notes for this. I was like, hey, I just had leftovers for pizza that day. So that was pretty cool. And frozen pizza. Tombstone. Thin and crispy. Bacon lovers. I recommend it to whoever wants is into that. I used to be able to actually a couple times polish off a whole pizza on my own. But luckily this time I was like, no. 3 is more than enough. You can finish the other 4 tomorrow. Kevin scoffs, saying, come on, Mom. You know all Paul's going to do is talk through the whole thing. It's not like Paul even knows what chamber music is. Norma tells Kevin that Paul wanted to expand his horizons, and she thinks that's nice. I don't think that's it. I think that Paul has become so infatuated with Norma, he's willing to sit through anything just to be next to her. Norma excuses herself, telling Kevin she has to get ready because the concert starts at 7. And the next scene, Kevin's all slumped on the couch with Buster at his side. Wow, in only 9 episodes, Buster went from an 8-week-old puppy to a 6-month to a year-old dog. I know puppies grow fast, but I didn't think that fast. I mean, I don't think that much time has passed, has it? They haven't even finished off the school year yet. Jack calls for Norma out in the living room, but she calls back that she's still getting dressed. She's still getting ready. Then there's a knock on the door as Jack goes to answer it. It's Paul, all dressed in a suit, holding a green Jell-O mold. He starts rambling about how his mother put fruit cocktail inside because they didn't have any marshmallows. But Jack just turns, while Paul's rambling, he turns his head and shouts over him to Norma that, hey, Paul's here. Norma tells him that she'll just be a few more minutes, and Jack relays the message to Paul as he invites him in to sit down. Jack tells Norma the pizza's still frozen in the middle, and she tells him to put it back in the oven for about 10 minutes at 450 degrees. He actually carries the pizza in his hands. There's no cardboard bottom or metal pan underneath. It's kind of gross. Like, did he pull that out of the oven with his bare hands? As Jack heads to the kitchen with the pizza, Paul adds how, oh, maybe if you sprinkle a little bit of water on the crust, that way it'll make the middle warm. And something about the sides, that way the sides won't burn or something. Kevin looks in their direction and says to us, now the kid who is dating his wife is now giving him cooking tips. That sentence just sounds wrong in so many ways, especially by today's standards. Kevin thinks, oh, his dad is not going to stand for this. But to Kevin's surprise, Jack asks Paul, well, how much water? And Paul just kind of tells him just a little sprinkle as he demonstrates with his hand. Kevin looks at Paul and thinks to himself, he better straighten Paul out before this goes any further and explain that his mom is just like any other mom. But just then, Norma walks out and Kevin and Paul's head both turn in unison. She comes out in slow-mo as we see her hair swish back and forth, and Kevin tells us how beautiful she looks. She says, hi, honey, and both Kevin and Paul reply at the same time. Yeah, that's kind of awkward. It makes me think of season 6 of One Tree Hill, or if you're familiar with the show, that season where Skills was dating Nathan's mom. Granted, they were 22 at the time, but it's still creepy. Paul stands up offering the jello mold to her as Jack comes out and asks if he should put some foil under the pizza. And at the same time, Paul and Norma just look in Jack's direction and tell him, no, it'll stick. Jack just looks down at the pizza disappointed. Seriously, this whole thing with Jack and the pizza is just hilarious. Poor guy can't even cook a frozen pizza without needing assistance. Where are Wayne and Karen? Is he just cooking that pizza for him and Kevin? So I want to play that clip because I find that funny as hell. I'll be right back.
Norma, this pizza's still frozen in the middle.
Turn it up to 450 for about another 10 minutes.
Oh.
Oh, and sprinkle a little water on the crust. I've always found the only way you can get them middle warm is burn the sides.
That was it. The same 13-year-old who was dating his wife was now giving him cooking tips? Dad wasn't going to stand for this.
How much water?
Oh, just a little sprinkle, sir.
Okay, then, if Dad wouldn't do it, I would. It was time to explain to Paul, my mother was just like everyone else's mother.
Okay, I'm ready.
Only more beautiful.
Hi, honey.
Hi. Oh, my mom wanted me to give this to you.
Oh, well, thank you. That was very nice of her.
Hey, should I put some foil on this?
It'll stick. Well, are you ready?
It was embarrassing. Didn't Dad see? While he was busy playing Susie Homemaker, my best friend was squiring his wife around town.
Well, I'll see you later. And if you want a snack tonight, there's Jell-O.
I'm really looking forward to this. It should be fine.
Yep, there was definitely something wrong with this picture. By 9 that night, the pizza was burned, the jello was gone, and the toaster had blown a fuse. Without Mom to help, Dad and I had been reduced to the lower end of the food chain. Plus the more rudimentary forms of communication. Seemed like a perfect time to do a little historical research.
Dad?
Hmm?
Did you know Mom when she wanted to be a singer?
That's right. She did.
Okay. An actual eyewitness. Maybe I was onto something here.
And was she really...
Kev, put a lid on it. I gotta get this finished by tomorrow.
Sure.
Norma and Paul head out the door with a jello mold, I might add. Why are they bringing that? Jack and Kevin hang in the doorway as Norma turns to them and then tells them, hey, later guys, for a snack, you can have this jello mold. Paul hands it to a reluctant Kevin and then turns back around as he and Norma head down the walkway. Kevin tells us that by 9 that night, the pizza was burnt, the jello mold was gone, and the toaster had blown a fuse. So now Jack and Kevin are sitting down to bowls of cereal as he comes out of the kitchen with a glass of milk. So we get to sit here with them and listen as they chomp on cornflakes. Yeah, good times. Kevin tries a little combo with his dad as he asks if his mom really wanted to be a singer, and then his dad kind of thinks for a minute. And then adds, oh, yeah, she did. As Kevin starts to ask about the radio jingle she had done, Jack interrupts him, telling him to kind of put a lid on it, you know, with the questions. You know, I got to get this done for work because it's due tomorrow, these papers or whatever. We see Kevin chilling on the couch watching TV, but his mind keeps wandering to his mom and Paul. Kevin wonders to himself why Norma told Paul about her old boyfriend, Donald Perlman, and not him, as he's watching TV. He sees an image of himself and Paul on the screen in place of the two men, supposedly brothers, as Kevin screams, Mom liked you best, at Paul. And here we go again with another one of Kevin's TV hallucinations. And boy, have there been a few in only 3 seasons. Norma and Paul come in the door as she walks by Kevin. She ruffles his hair. Kevin considers it's time to have it out with Paul about his relationship with his mother, as we cut to Norma telling a distracted Jack about her time listening to chamber music. He just nods, engrossed in his work, and throws in a couple uh-huhs to satisfy her. She turns to the boys and asks, "Would you guys boys like some hot cocoa?" And Paul tells her, "I'd love some." And that's when Kevin tells us it wasn't Paul he was angry at, it was his mother. He's probably jealous of Paul monopolizing her time and making Kevin realize he's kind of taking her for granted a little bit. For all the bitching he's done about wanting to be an independent teen and spread his wings free of his mom's apron strings, he sees someone else, his best friend no less, more than happy to step in and take his place for her affection. Or basically just, you know, for that added attention. Do you think if she hadn't complimented him on his glasses, he probably wouldn't be this overly infatuated with her, I don't think. Kevin hangs back in the doorway watching them together. He tells us how he couldn't go in there because whatever was going on between his mother and Paul was just between his mother and Paul. Kevin sits at the dining room table while his dad works and watches the interaction in the kitchen as Paul hands Norma a red rose. I'm not sure how I feel about that. I mean, it was a fun time, Paul. Please, don't ruin it. Don't turn it by turning it into something it's not. She takes it as he tells her it's from his mother's garden, and she thanks him and takes it. She tells him, "You shouldn't waste this on me, Paul." Speaking of, doesn't he have a girlfriend, you know, Carla? What would she say to this? She can't compete with Norma. He tells her she has to take it. You know, like, I'm allergic. And then they all kind of like, you know, giggle a little bit. Like, oh, yes, that's right. You're allergic. You risked your life to give me this rose. She tells him, Paul, there are going to be a lot of girls in your life who would die to get a rose from you. She again tells him he's a very special person and that she had a great time. Paul thanks her and heads home. You know, that's the thing about, you know, some people, it's like, maybe it's not your time yet. Like, in junior high and high school, you're like, no one's ever going to look at me that way. Like, you know, the quarterback looks at the cheerleader and stuff like that. That's because maybe it isn't your time, but maybe because that special person that you're probably going to spend the rest of your life with or is going to look at you the way a, you know, a quarterback looks at a cheerleader or vice versa, or, you know, a popular guy looks at a popular or what or whatever. You know, I wanted, oh, my cousins are, you know, they're dating and everything like that. I wish I could have a boyfriend. And my grandma, like, and this is when I was a teenager, and she's like, you don't need a boyfriend. But, and then it's just like, my dad told me something like, you know, when you know, I didn't notice your mom until after high school. And that's just, you know, she was in a grade below him. And so it wasn't until after, I think, they had both graduated that, you know, he had noticed her one day when she was working at the golf course. But I kind of took it to heart as that maybe it wasn't my time yet for someone to notice me like that or to look at me like that. Because at that age, you're young and you're impressionable and everything. And that's why things in junior high and high school, those relationships don't always last. Maybe a small percentage of them do, but not always. So that's just what I'm saying. You know how they say the best is yet to come? That's because that's true. Your life hasn't even begun yet. So I'm sorry to go off on a tangent like that, but it's just, it makes me think that one day, that person is going to look at you the way you want them to, but it might not happen right away. So just wait, just because it's going to happen. It might not be in the way you expect it to. So Paul does thank her, and he heads home. In the next scene, Jack finally takes a break from his work and talks with her in the kitchen, asking, "So, you had a great time?" And she looks at him like, oh, now you're interested? But, you know, she just nods and says, mm-hmm. He looks at her and thinks to himself, then asks, isn't there supposed to be another one of these things? And I'm all like, hey, get it, Jack. Oh, you go, guy. She kind of smiles and adds next month. And he adds, you know what? I think we'll go to that. Her face lit up like a Christmas tree when he said that. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I want to play that clip because it's so cute. Even though they're grown adults. But it's so cute. I'll be right back.
So, you had a good time?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, isn't there supposed to be another one of these things?
Next month.
Huh. So, we'll go.
Okay.
Kevin tells us the night Paul gave his mom a rose, he gave Kevin a new way of seeing her as he heads over to the table to join her. I want to play this clip between Kevin and his mom as he says, I guess Paul's not going to drink his. Can I have some? And she tells him, I was making it for you. So I will be right back.
The night Paul Pfeiffer gave my mom a rose, he gave me something too. He gave me a new way of seeing her.
I guess Paul's not gonna drink his. Can I have some?
I was making it for you.
Paul made my mother feel good because he didn't look at her the way we always did. We saw Mom, and he saw Norma Arnold. And I think she liked that, for a change.
Mom?
Mm-hmm?
Did you really audition to sing for a commercial?
Oh, it was a radio commercial.
Yeah?
For Axel Grease.
You know what Axel Grease is?
That night, I found out my mother once got sent to the principal's office for smoking in a bathroom, and that she almost married someone else until she met my dad. I learned a lot about her, about who she was, who she'd been, about who she wanted to be. And the next morning, she was Mom again, our straight man. Only this time, I knew better.
Kevin tells us Paul made his mom feel good because when they, Kevin and his siblings, you know, Karen and Wayne, when they looked at her, all they saw was Mom. But when Paul looked at her, he saw Norma Arnold. And he says she liked that. Kevin asks if she really sung in a radio commercial, and she tells him it was for Axel Grease. Do they still make that? Is she getting residual checks for this? They both crack up at that, the idea of her singing for Axel Grease. Kevin tells us that he found out his mom got sent to the principal's office for smoking in the bathroom and how she almost married someone else before she met his dad. Really? Is it the guy she went to prom with in the reunion episode, I think in either season 5 or 6? So sitting there, he tells us he learned a lot about her, who she was, who she'd been, and who she wanted to be. The scene changes to the next morning as we see her back in mom mode, and then the episode closes out on pictures of Norma from her past. I think there's one of her as a little girl. Then we see Norma and Jack together as she's pregnant with Karen, and he's in army gear. I think there's another one of her as a little girl. There's one, you know, and as the song Unforgettable plays overhead, one looks to be a close-up shot of her on her wedding day, maybe, and then there's one of her when she's a little girl with her mother. Then we close out the episode on a shot of her with Jack and the kids in front of the house. This was a really, really cute episode. It's time for my Flower Power episode rating. I'm giving it 3 out of 5 Flower Power petals. 1, for Norma cheering Paul up after he is voted brainiest on the Lisa Berlini poll. She sure knows how to cheer someone up. I'm referring to Norma, not Lisa Berlini. She does not know how to cheer anybody up. Not with that pole, and not for friend-zoning Kevin in season one when she turned him down for a date with Mark Paul Gosselaar from Saved by the Bell. Two, I loved seeing Jack not knowing how to cook a frozen pizza, and then Paul ends up giving him advice. And three, for the ending, when Kevin and Norma enjoy hot chocolate and have a conversation about her, Paul telling Kevin all this stuff he didn't know about his mom, the radio commercial, the ex-boyfriend she almost married, etc., leads Kevin to take an interest in who his mom was and is. I knocked two flower power petals off for the uncomfortable close-up shots of the girls playing field hockey. I noticed Winnie wasn't among them. Speaking of Winnie, would Kevin have chosen her for best smile or not even have included her on the list? I mean, if his intentions were good, I think Winnie still might have not liked having that put on her like that. And I knocked one off for Doug Porter mentioned how this one girl shaves her legs and he's drooling over this thought. How does he know she shaves her legs? And then Paul mentions Norma and how she should go on the list for best smile, which leads Doug to creepily add how she shaves her legs too. That boy, yikes, just yikes. So here's my quote of the episode, which you heard in the little clip. That night, Paul Pfeiffer gave my mom a rose. He gave me something, too. He gave me a new way of seeing her. Paul made my mother feel good because he didn't look at her the way we always did. We saw Mom, and he saw Norma Arnold, and I think she liked that for a change. That night, I found out my mother once got sent to the principal's office for smoking in the bathroom, and that she almost married someone else until she met my dad. I learned a lot about her, about who she was, about who she'd been, about who she wanted to be. And the next morning, she was Mom again, our straight man, only this time, I knew better. My wonderling words of wisdom. At first, what seemed like a harmless crush here that Paul had had on Norma seemed to develop into something more, it felt, from his side at least. Towards the end, Paul started to make me uncomfortable. I grew up in the day when it was okay to have crushes like that on a friend's parent, but it was innocent, harmless. It was never taken serious because it never went further than that, and it certainly was never acted upon. Today, it seems we live in an age where the lines now are so blurred they're practically non-existent. I was in middle school when I first heard about the Mary-Kay Letourneau thing, the teacher-student relationship, and that was because I saw the book at a local grocery store with all the other books. And the kid, Villy, was about my age. I was like 12, 13 at the time, so it really seemed really shocking to me. I'm like, it was so creepy because the idea of a much older woman and a child, Villy, was 13 at the time, and Mary had to have been, like, in her 30s. They were having a sexual relationship, which resulted in him becoming a father twice, was simply unheard of in my mind. Now it seems there are teachers or adults out there that seem to think it's okay to have that type of relationship with a child, and that is so beyond disgusting. I'm happy this episode was done in good taste, being it was in the early 70s, because I don't think it would fly on TV today. Let's give a shout out to some new listeners for the week. We have Seattle, Washington, Daytona Beach, Florida, Edmond, Oklahoma, Brooklyn, New York, Port of Spain, Trinidad and Tobago, California, Carlton, Australia, Huntington, West Virginia, Mexico, Beverly Hills, California, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, London, United Kingdom, Germany, Georgia, St. Petersburg, Florida, Pakistan, San Jose, California, Indonesia, Newburyport, Massachusetts, Medford, New York, Doylestown, Pennsylvania, India, Phoenix, Arizona, Anaheim, California, Winnipeg, Canada, India, Germantown, Tennessee, Winona, Minnesota, Westlake Village, California, Spain, and Belgium. All right. Join me later this weekend when I review season 2, episode 22, Daddy's Little Girl, which aired on May 8th, 1990. In this episode, Karen's 18th birthday is coming up and everybody in the Arnold household is preparing for it. Everybody but her. She does not want cake. She doesn't want presents. She wants none of it. But is it because she doesn't want such a pointless traditional or because she's not ready for it? This is the plot from courtesy of IMDb. So have a great weekend. Also, if you guys want, you can go to iTunes, leave a nice review, and I'll give you a shout out on the podcast. There are also other ways to support the podcast. You can go to Facebook and go to the Looking Back in My Wonder Years, a Wonder Years podcast fan page. You can also follow me on Instagram at LBOM Wonder Years Podcast or Twitter at LBOM Wonder Years Pod. So have a good weekend and I will be back here tomorrow. Bye-bye.